Welcome to Indie Business Radio for Monday, July 27th, 2009. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. Well, today is a very special day for many reasons. Number one, I have a fantastic guest. But number two, I believe this is the first live broadcast of a regularly scheduled internet radio show using TwitCam, which is, of course, a great new interface between Twitter and video live. So you're looking at my face now. Here I am. This is the first time I've done my radio show with live video. Actually, I did try once before with Ustream, and Ustream didn't work as well as it seems like TwitCam may work. And I see some people joining already. Welcome to Lillianne Skincare and Deb Schilling. It's so exciting to have you guys here. And we're going to be talking today about successfully integrating family and career, a very timely topic for all of us and a big juggling act for many people. But the first thing I want to tell you about is if you are watching the show on TwitCam, if you want to listen to the show, if you can't hear it on TwitCam, I think you probably can, but you can still go to my website at indiebusinessradio.com and choose your player and just listen to the show live. You don't have to join TwitCam to be with us live. You can listen live to the show there at indiebusinessradio.com. Just choose whichever player you'd like, and you'll be able to listen to the show. And, of course, they're recorded, so you can listen to them later. But for those of you who are on Twitter and like to chat about issues of importance to us as small business owners, then this is a great way to listen to the show because you can listen, you can chat your questions to me, and I'll relay them to the guests, and you can get real live answers and talk with other people about some issues that are affecting your business. So I welcome you here, and I hope you're having a good time. Please feel free to chat me and let me know that you can hear me and see me fine. And also, if you have some friends, if you want to chat the show to your friends and let them know to come, that would be great, too. Before we get started, I want to tell you about an Indie Network member product. You know I have to show these off. These are some earrings that I'm wearing today that are made by Indie Beauty Network member Penny Mills. And she is with Ladies Blend. She's also on Twitter at Ladies Blend. And she makes these beautiful earrings. These are pretty blue. They match my outfit today. They're Swarovski crystals, which is, of course, fabulous. I love to wear my member products and wear their beauty products and show them off to people. So there we go. All right, so let's get started on today's show. I am very excited to have as my guest today the author of this fantastic book. I'm showing it to my viewers right now. It's called Women at the Top, Powerful Leaders Tell Us How to Combine Work and Family. And the author, actually the co-author, is Professor Diane F. Halpern. She is the former president of the American Psychological Association, the author of numerous books and articles on the topic of women and success in career and family. And she joins us today from her home office in Southern California. Welcome, Professor Halpern.
Thank you very much, Donna Maria. Please call me Diane.
Oh, great. Thank you so much. Well, Diane, I loved your book. It's got some great tips in it, and really what's so special about it is the stories that you share from women all over in different professions at the height of their careers who talk about how they successfully integrate work and family. But I want to start with asking you to share a little bit with our listeners about your story, because I read about some of the things that you've done when you had smaller children, and you're amazing. You started to pursue your doctorate degree when you had a two-year-old, and that was your youngest.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think my story is a lot like many of your listeners, women with children of various ages who are really pursuing their work dreams, their careers, and blending it with families. And no one ever said it was easy. We certainly don't say that in the book, but we certainly do talk to women who have done it successfully and combine it with the research literature to provide really advice for all of us on how and why we can blend these two main aspects of our lives.
Right, right. Well, let's talk a little bit about how we perceive ourselves to kind of get started on the show. One of the interesting quotes in your book, you're quoting a woman, a Chinese executive woman who I think she was the president of one of the Equal Employment Opportunity Commissions there, and she talks about how women perceive themselves, how we perceive ourselves, and how that impacts the career and family choices that we make. I'm going to read that quote, and I'd like for you to comment on it, Diane. It says, It is a misconception for young women to think, quote, I can't get married, I can't have children, because then I will lose my competitiveness, unquote. That is wrong, says this author. So much of women's growth comes from being a mother and wife. The way for women to lead is as equals with men and to work in the professional world in their own womanly style. Tell us a little bit about how that comment and other perceptions that we have of ourselves sort of shape how we pursue our careers once we start them.
Well, I think this is a good quote to start with because when she starts out talking about her life on Wall Street at a time when there were relatively few women on Wall Street, and the women who were there really felt that they had to imitate the men. And by that, I mean an imitate the men. Women who talked to who had babies were back at work in 2 days. They were covering up the fact that they had child care and other responsibilities at home. And certainly to some extent that has changed, and to a greater extent it should. The idea is we don't have to be somebody else. We don't have to adopt a leadership style that we believe is associated with successful men. In fact, we can lead as ourselves. And I think that has been a really big change and something that we're moving more in that direction.
Well, it makes me think about when I started my career as an attorney. It was quite a few years ago. We won't say how many, but I remember, Diane, when I was single and I didn't have any children, I remember observing very carefully the men and the women who were having babies at that time, because I had mine late. They were having children at that time. I remember watching them very carefully, Diane, and seeing what was going on in their world, because I wanted to have a family, and I knew that I was, as you talk about in your book, social learning. I was watching people and learning from what I saw them do. And there was, at that time, a big difference between the shape that the women who had newborns arrived to work in and the shape that that other women who had not had children arrived to work in. I mean, there was so much stress.
That's true. That part certainly remains true. If you have substantial, in our book, what we looked at is women with substantial care responsibilities. For most of the people, that meant having children. But there are other kinds of substantial care people have. They care for elderly parents. They might care for disabled siblings. People who have those additional care responsibilities are overwhelmingly the women. And, in fact, they have to find a way to have both halves of their life so that they're not in competition. And one way that was not very successful is to simply pretend that you don't have these additional care responsibilities. That's not going to work because it is a substantial care. One of the best ways to get it to work, of course, is to get men to assume a substantial part of the caring in society. And that's an important part, an important message in the book.
Well, and let's talk a little bit about that, because I have a business. I'm a CEO of a business, as are many of my listeners.
Certainly.
And some do not have traditional jobs, and if they do, they're usually trying to figure out how they can transition from those jobs to a part-time business that they've started. But I'm very fortunate and blessed in that my husband is a full-time partner in the family. I mean, I don't have to, you know, the clothes washing and all the stuff, we juggle all that stuff together. So tell me from your experience talking with people, and let's think about young women who may not have had children yet, how important is it for them, if they do want to excel in business or in careers, to make sure that they choose someone who can carry that kind of load and have that kind of attitude?
Well, those are important discussions that have to be had in advance. Probably the most important advice that anyone can give is to marry or select the right partner. Mm-hmm. Now, I say partner. In our book, we interviewed all women who were at the top of their profession, where the professions ranged from chief of police for a large district to Supreme Court justices.
Right.
And we did this in 3 different societies. And so we also looked at it cross-culturally. And it was really important that you have those discussions and have a pretty good understanding in advance. Difficult, if not impossible, to really have equality at work if you don't have equality in the home. And that's an important part for everyone to recognize, as well as recognizing the benefits to men who have important relationships with children and with others in their lives. It's well documented that there are important benefits to the whole family when men are involved in the caregiving.
Right, and your book specifically points out that there are that all those benefits, many of them that are directed in specific form to their daughters, who eventually grow up to have to make this career choice. So, you know, and one other thing that your book says is that among the small percentage of women who are at the top of their professional games, almost half of them do not have any children or substantial caregiving responsibilities outside of their job. Almost half?
Yes. I mean, the number is really incredible, and it really isn't until you stop and look at the data that you're really struck by it. In the United States, and we'll talk about the U.S. specifically for now, although it is a cross-cultural study, employment of women is just about equal in percentage to that of men. For the first time ever in history, the workforce is just about 50% female. That's not because women have made great strides in equality in the last decade, but largely because of the massive layoffs in jobs that are traditionally male. So it isn't for good reasons that that's necessarily happened. But in fact, it's true that we now have a workforce that's 50% female. And in fact, we have a large numbers of women in middle management positions. We have many more women graduating from college. But what we have is very few women in the very top of their careers, whatever the profession is, whatever the career, except for those that are, you know, female-dominated like nursing. So if you look at Fortune 500 companies, less than 2% of the CEOs are female. If you go down another 500 and look at the top 1,000, the number is still 2%. If we look at Europe and we look at who's on the London Stock Exchange, the number is around 2%.
Right.
So there are really very few women in the top positions. And as you mentioned, half of those do not have caregiving responsibilities or children, after, of course, the major caregiving responsibility. And so what we really did is we looked at those who made it to the top with children and asked them, how did they do it? What's their advice? What have we learned from them along the way? And I think that an incredible, rich number of stories that, I found very inspiring and very moving.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and we're going to talk about some of those, starting with yours, because in order for you to write this book, you had to essentially, didn't you have to leave the country for
yes.
a while?
Yes. It's important to realize that our responsibilities change throughout our life course. And what might be true for someone with toddlers or infants is not the same as someone who has teenagers, and I certainly never said teenagers were easier. I just would say they are different. Or someone who has children who are grown and out of the home. But it is true that I have my co-author, Fanny Chung, who is chair of psychology department at Chinese University, lived in the U.S. with and worked with me for several months, and then I moved to Hong Kong and worked at her university for several months as we conferred on the book.
Right.
It was easier to do it now that, you know, my children are older. And indeed, you know, our needs vary throughout the lifespan. And I think that's also an important fact to keep in mind. There isn't one universal model that works for all people in all jobs or at all times.
That's so true. I have a friend who always says, you know, you got to be fluid and flexible, because as soon as you get it down in one genre, your kids are one age and you feel like you're in the flow, everything changes.
I don't think I ever felt that I got it down, but at least I got it manageable.
Right, well, you feel like you have a little system in place, and then,
yes.
and then suddenly something happens. And certainly in today's job market, that is very true. More unexpected things are happening where everyone's jobs are concerned than they have in previous years. So we're going to come back and talk with Professor Diane Halpern, the author of Women at the Top, this great book right here. We're going to be talking with her about some of these specific examples that women that she interviewed around the world, but also specifically in the United States. And we're going to be talking about some of the tips and experiences they have to offer and how we can put them to use in our lives. We'll be right back in a few minutes. Don't touch that mouse.
Why is everyone listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com? Because it's the future of talk radio. Every day, more and more people are finding internet radio as not just an alternative media, but as a replacement to traditional AM and FM broadcast stations. Internet radio offers a wider variety of programs, convenient on-demand listening that meets your schedule, and fewer commercial interruptions. And GlobalTalkRadio.com is already leading the way by matching this content with a highly targeted internet audience. GlobalTalkRadio.com offers its listeners one of the widest programming varieties on the internet, from business and finance to self-improvement, paranormal, health, literature, romance, politics, and more. There are also opportunities for prospective hosts who would like to host their own weekly or one-time talk shows. Want to learn more? Check us out at www.globaltalkradio.com and see the future of talk radio today.
Back to Indie Business Radio. We're here today talking with Professor Diane Halpern, the co-author of Women at the Top, and she has interviewed women all over the world, in a few countries in particular, but namely the United States, about how they successfully integrate work and family and how they make things work. And one of the things you discovered, Diane, is that the successful women that you talked with, the women who sort of have positive experiences where all this is concerned, generally view their lives as an integrated whole instead of as two separate things, one work, one family. Can you talk a little bit about that and how we can benefit from those experiences?
Yes, absolutely. Any literature on how people balance work and family, there's a variety of strategies that are identified, and some are called compartmentalizing, where you only take care of work when you're at work, you only take care of family when you're at home, and what almost all of the women found was that that was a strategy that doesn't work, because they live one life. They don't live two separate lives, and they seem to manage much better, in fact, by combining the two. And again, the actual strategies, and we do have all sorts of lists, really depended on the age of the children and the nature of their job. But they found ways to make it work together. So, for example, the women would leave the office if they had an office, or leave their work to take care of, take a child to the dentist, to see a child's play or a soccer game. But while they're waiting outside for things to get started, they might return two phone calls. That they're really doing the two simultaneously. They, almost all of them, make plans so they can get home regularly for dinners with the family, and almost all of them say they work after they put the children to bed at night, so they're working from home. And they really find ways to integrate the two rather than keeping them separate. And they all had somewhat different rules. One woman said any time she traveled more than 2 days, she arranged to take the children with her. And, of course, she had to have child care coverage while she's doing the work, but that way she could have the evenings with the children or take a late afternoon if it were free. And it was really more of that kind of, you know, blending the two rather than keeping them separate that seemed to work for these women.
And it's interesting that you mentioned that. I know just this morning, we had this whole morning plan to get ready for the first live video of the show. And wouldn't you know it, one of our kids woke up with a fever and wasn't able to go to her typical camp. So we were sort of juggling a little bit. And, of course, I sat down and had lunch with her not too long ago. And at the same time, I was sort of reading over my notes for today's show. So
yes, it isn't a matter that, you know, you're never attending fully to one. But in fact, there are sometimes, you know, you don't need to fully attend, you know, while she's eating her breakfast, that you can't be looking over your notes.
And let's talk about that, too, because the fact of the matter is, if you want to have both, if you decide, I want to have a family and I want to have a successful business at the same time, that's a choice that we make, right?
It's not a choice for most women. In fact,
tell me what you mean by that.
It's not a choice because very few people can live on a single income, even if they have that option. In fact, the choice to work is really not a choice for most women. Women, for the most part, are working for the same reasons that men are, to pay the rent, for health care, to pay the groceries. And when we get to work, in fact, again, we don't want to work at lower, at the, we want to be promoted. We want to do a good job. We want to be rising. We want to be in decision-making responsibilities and make more money. So that the fact is that often we think about women's working as a choice. And it's really not a choice, especially in today's economy when so many people are being laid off their care of sole support of the family.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. If a young lady is young enough, Diane, she doesn't have any children and she's not married, and she's looking at her options, at that point in time, is it then fair to say that there's a choice?
No, she's really... there's really preparing for a lifetime, and a lifetime that is going to involve meaningful relationships with close people, and for meaningful work. One thing psychology has done in the last two decades or so is we've moved away from focusing on mental illness and have looked at mental health. And the two things that come out when we talk about what makes people happy is having close, meaningful relationships. And for most of us, that means family, although, of course, it doesn't have to. And having a meaningful work. And having those two together seem to be what's most important for people. And so in terms of good mental health, it's important to have meaningful work in terms of, and most women need the income.
Right. That's an interesting way to think about it. And to be honest with you, I hadn't really thought of it that way before, I guess because I've always thought of it as, I guess because I had choices. I guess maybe that's the difference, and not everyone has them.
Very few. In fact, right now, the percentage of women in the U.S. who are single, not married, when they give birth is 40%. It is an astounding number. The U.S. isn't the only country, nor do we have the highest rate. So it is also true in the industrialized world. Now, many of these women are in relationships, but they certainly, the notion that one is supported as a woman, you know, with a successful husband, is going to fit very few people's lives, especially lifelong, especially with high divorce rates. Mm-hmm. And the fact that, you know, things happen in life, men are being laid off in very large numbers.
Did you say it was 40% single moms? Is that what you...
Yes, in the U.S.
That's big.
Yeah, it's an astounding number. I had to check it myself because, and it's been, you know, rising. And the greatest rises are not among teenage moms. That number has been going down, which I would think is a good thing. The greatest rise are in women over age 30.
So, Diane, how do we support each other? I mean, if it's 40%, then there's another 60% who are dealing with the same issues. Mm-hmm. They just happen to be married, right?
Right. That's correct.
So how do we work together to support each other?
That's an important question. I think the mommy wars are very unfortunate and that there are no winners in the mommy wars. I think you must be familiar with the term. That's a term that's used to describe the fact that some of the hostilities between women who work outside the home with children, who have children, and those who don't. And these are difficult decisions for everyone, whichever you choose, assuming that you have a choice. And as I've said, the reality is most women don't. It's not necessary to denigrate the choices of someone else who did something differently. And it really is a win-win situation because what we want is people to be able to make the best choice for themselves. And we could certainly be a lot more supportive of people who have made choices that are living lives that are different from our own.
And one of the things your book talks about is how we manage our time and our priorities. And I found that one quote from the book is especially informative. I'm gonna read it here. It's on page 50 from Morgenstern, and she talks about visualizing time as space, with the metaphor of visualizing time as space and thinking of maybe I'll paraphrase it instead of reading it. Thinking of the amount of hours in the day as a closet, and all of our priorities and things we have to do as boxes. How does that help us?
Well, one thing that almost everyone is, and that is short on time. And that's true for women who don't work outside the home, who are caring for children all day long. Certainly they have incredibly busy lives also. And the idea is, how do we manage to fit more than we possibly can into one 24-hour day? And the advice is really pretty sound. One has to be very clear about their priorities.
Right.
For most of these women, they have two priorities, their families and their work. And things, everything else, they find a way to either outsource it or to simply let it go. So you really need to be clear what it is that's very important in your life. If for you it's really important that you exercise every day or five times a week, you've got to put that in there and say, this is one of my top priorities. And you have to really be sure that you keep a calendar and that you keep one calendar as the recommendation, not a separate one for work or for family, because, in fact, we live one life, and it's the best way to avoid getting overbooked. And, in fact, they recommend a family calendar for people who are, in fact, are married or have someone else that they're sharing their life with, so that everyone is on the same calendar, and people are very clear about what's important to them. Outsourcing anything that they can that doesn't pertain to these two priorities. If you can afford it, and unless you love cleaning your house, get someone else to clean your house. That employs somebody else. And if you can't afford it, then let it go, because you're really focusing on what it is that's most important for you. Creating expectations at work as well as at home that you have other responsibilities, so that, in fact, and this will vary with your job, this will vary with, you know, what the nature of your children, but you might say, I have to leave work every day at 6:15, or whatever the time is for you, and I'm going to be home and have dinner with the kids every night and do homework with them, and then at 9 o'clock from 9 to 10, I'm going to, you know, get back and do an hour of work, and at that time, family knows you're doing your work time. So that there's clear expectations at work and at home about, you know, how you're going to manage your time.
And so what I'm getting here, just to you know, summarize a couple of tips, that these are
sure.
so valuable that all of us can do, is we as you said, plan ahead and choose wisely with whoever you're going to be partnering up with on the front end, and that's obviously very important. But maintaining one calendar, you know, it's interesting that you said that. A while ago, many years ago, I remember keeping two calendars because that made sense at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I was married. I didn't have kids, not a whole lot of responsibilities outside of work. And what I remember very distinctly, writing things down in my calendar at work and writing them down at home and thinking, why am I keeping two calendars? Why am I doing this? It just seemed like there was so much talk back then about separation of work and family. And, you know, if you didn't separate your personal life from your business life, you were in danger of thinking that all you were was one big employee. So I like that tip about combining everything together and not stressing out over, I mean, would you say it's fair to say don't even stress out over the terminology, just do what works for you?
Do what works for you, but you really need to have a careful plan. Since it's very easy, if you really have heavy family responsibilities and a very demanding job, that you really need to be able to focus on. And again, it will vary with the nature of your family responsibilities and your job. If there's a deadline at work coming, you know, then that has to be down on the calendar with, you know, with enough advanced planning so that if you wake up with a sick 9-year-old, you know, the work is done ahead of time. So that, you know, things that you do to arrange, and that's with careful planning.
Right. And I know you interviewed in your book women who are both successful in companies that they own. They're the
mm-hmm.
CEO of a company that they own, and you also interviewed women who are successful as you say, you know, Supreme Court justices
mm-hmm.
and high-level political people, as well as the CEOs of publicly traded companies. Do you notice any differences between the choices that any people in any of those three groups have to make, a corporate CEO, or your own company, or public service?
Well, these are all demanding positions,
uh-huh.
and they each, you know, have different kinds of time demands, different numbers of employees whom they may be responsible for supervising, They're also very, I mean, one of the advantages of being at the top is that, in fact, you have more flexibility. In some ways, it's more difficult to be the secretary or the school teacher or the nurse because they lack a lot of the flexibility that, in fact, people have when they have the abilities to set some of their own time schedules. So that while there are heavy pressures on women at the top of their profession, and you may have a business where you employ lots of people, that's a tremendous pressure. With it also comes some of the flexibility that allows you to, you know, manage your time a little bit more freely.
Right. Right.
One of these women, what the women also did when they got to the top is almost uniformly they made it easier for other women.
Yeah.
Jenny Ming, who was the former CEO of Old Gap and Navy, had twins and a child about 2 years older, and she rose through a gigantic corporation with heavy child care demands. And one of the things she did when she was in position of power was that she actually, you know, did many things for working families to allow them to spend, you know, take off in an afternoon to go to the child soccer game or play or, you know, parent-teacher meeting, and left it to the individual to be sure their work got done.
And then that certainly goes back to how one way, if you are in a position like that, that you can support other women is by creating those kinds of opportunities. And certainly many of our listeners have done that. They have small businesses and they have created part-time jobs and flexible work opportunities for women in their communities to be able to be hired by them on terms that they will give them the kind of flexibility mm-hmm. you're talking about. So I love being able to share that that's what my Indie Beauty Network members do a lot of, too. We're going to come back and talk with Professor Diane Halpern in our final segment about maintaining relationships with our significant others and spouses while we are also running our businesses and leading companies and things. So that's our next topic. We'll be right back in a few minutes. Thanks a lot. See you in a second.
Want to stay on top of what's new in the radio industry? Sign up for a free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio, available exclusively to listeners of globaltalkradio.com, and find out what's new in the world of online radio. Listeners can find out about new shows and special guests. People with something special to offer can find out how to become a guest and how to prepare for an interview. And prospective hosts will find a valuable resource for everything from planning their new program to selecting topics and guests, recouping expenses by selling advertising, and more. Sign up today for your free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio by visiting www.globaltalkradio.com and learn about the future of talk radio today.
Indie Business Radio. I'm here today with my guest, Professor Diane Halpern. She is the former president of the American Psychological Association and also the author of this book, Women at the Top, Powerful Leaders Tell Us How to Combine Work and Family. And she and her co-author have interviewed women in a variety of different countries, including the United States, and gotten some of their best tips. And we've been talking about those, about how to successfully integrate family and business, particularly when you're running a business or you have a career that puts you in a leadership position. So, Diane, let's talk in our last segment about our relationships with our spouses or our significant others, our partners in our lives. We talked about children, talked a little bit about the mindset that we need to have in order to make all this work. Can we talk for a second about some of the people you interviewed and how they dealt with relationships? There's some issues there, aren't there?
Oh, absolutely. In these interviews, we specifically, you know, we had a set of topics we wanted to cover, and certainly how does it work in a married relationship? The women we selected to interview were women who had at least at one time been married. So they, you know, these were people who, by definition, for inclusion, had been married, and virtually all of whom had children. And so we really wanted to know, how do you make the relationship last when you as the woman have the high pressure, high prestige, high media job? And most of these women were really in the limelight, in the newspaper repeatedly, on television, on radio. For some, it was a problem with their relationships, and as you might expect, for others, it was not. And one thing that came through, I mean, repeatedly, is that if the husband was jealous of the woman's success, this was going to be a formula for disaster.
Right.
That you really needed to find someone who would take pride and in your success and be supportive of it and not feel threatened that your success somehow diminished him. The reason we dealt with women who had been married, and we've been asked, well, what about women who are in lesbian relationships? And while we would assume that many of the basics of what we say would hold for any relationship, in fact, it's that sex role issue that is important in looking at heterosexual relationships. And that's where I think some of the important differences are. In the United States and in many places around the world, women marry up. And by up, I mean they tend to marry men who are older, men who are better educated, men who earn more, men who are taller. I mean, I could go on what the variables are that people use when they marry. And when women become highly successful, that's in some sense upending that relationship. It typically will be the higher earner in the relationship, and sometimes by a lot. They'll gain a lot more media attention, and they'll be the one whose career really starts becoming primary.
One of the things you notice then is that this is totally dynamic. This is not a static situation, and what
absolutely.
You think life is like, or what your life is like today in your business and with your family and spouse, of course, it's going to be different, and that's going to change not only for the relationship, but also how you have to integrate your business into it.
Absolutely. I mean, someone who marries at a young age, you know, doesn't know what their future is.
Right.
None of the women said that they started out at an early age to be the top of their career. They each took a step at a time, worked hard, were
right.
good at it, loved their work, and went to the top. But it wasn't as though at age 20 or 25 or whenever they might have entered into a marriage that this is what their life plan was. What women who had supportive husbands, husbands who took pride in their wives' accomplishment, husbands who were not embarrassed when they went to social functions and they were introduced as Mr. Wife's last name.
Right.
That there's no reason for that to be a terribly awkward or embarrassing situation. It's simply a matter of, no, that's not my name.
Right.
My name is something else.
Right.
And that's really, you know, it's only a cause for embarrassment if we take it to mean something far more than a simple confusion about names.
Right. And so what did you notice about the women who reported to you in the book that, you know, they have good relationships with their husbands, even though, one, you know, she may have the career that has all the attention and everything else, and he may not. What did you notice about how they interacted with each other? What sorts of things did they implement in their relationships that they could share? And I know every situation is different.
Absolutely. Every situation is different. They often described their husband as their closest friend,
okay.
their most ardent supporter.
Right.
And they certainly spent time together as a family. They carved out time, and there's a variety of stories about exactly how they did that. And they recognized each other's needs and what was primarily important for each of them.
Mm-hmm.
For some, saving face was critically important. That is, that the husband, and for others, the husband was actually quite willing to assume more of the child care and home care and work together as a unit. And, you know, it certainly varied along all of those dimensions, and it also changed throughout the lifespan. Our women, to get to the top, you can't get to the top in your 20s. So that our women, you know, were you know, all women, I guess our youngest may have been in her early 40s, and they went all the way up in age. And they were able to look back and say how their relationships changed at each space in their relationship, and you know, as their children grew older.
Did you interview any women who, I did read a couple of interviews of women who said there were some, as you said, very awkward moments, and just in one case, a woman who described, you know, quite honestly that it was very difficult to get her husband to come to some of the events with her, the professional events that she had to go to. It just emotionally was a big strain. Did you talk with any women who, whose either businesses or their jobs or their marriages had to change for the long term because of some of these issues?
Well, everyone's had a story about their relationship with their husband. For the U.S. sample, and this, again, it's a somewhat older sample by the time you get to the top, about half of the women were either divorced or widowed. Now, it's not large enough a sample to say that this is significantly different from the U.S. population as a whole, and especially with so many fewer women getting married late. When more women are getting married at older ages or not marrying at all, it's likely that those numbers are going to look different, you know, a decade or two decades from now, because people are just getting married so much later or skipping marriage altogether. I mean, it's just, it is really a big change in the nature and structure of families. But clearly there were stories, women told heartbreaking stories about relationships that broke up. And of course they highlight the fact that these women were highly successful and they felt that their husbands could not handle their success.
Mm-hmm.
Would they have broken up under some other circumstance? You know, is this simply the circumstance that presented itself? We can never know that on an individual basis. But also many of the relationships stayed extremely strong and loving into very old age, where they were supportive of each other.
Right.
That, and it wasn't based on who earned the most money. It was far more flexible than that. People were able to adjust and you know, did what was important for each other. And, what, you know, and there's touching stories for someone, husband's really home-cooked meals were critical, so that this woman actually, you know, made meals in advance. And they worked it out for what was important for their relationship.
Right. And I guess that's key. And I, you as a psychologist, you know, you assess these issues in such better ways than people like me who just kind of, you know, try. It doesn't always make the professional sense that it should. So I love how you're describing over and over again that every situation is different. And we as women really do have to sit down, right, and assess our situations. And while we don't have choices where everything is concerned, as you pointed out earlier, we do have some where how we juggle all of this is concerned.
Absolutely. I mean, well, I said where most people don't have a choice to not work outside the home.
Right.
And I think that, you know, it's just not an option for many people, although there are certainly some. That, in fact, we do have other kinds of options about how we spend our time and how we arrange things so that we can have what's most important to us.
Well, what are you seeing along these lines? Because one of the things that I'm getting more and more of is emails from people who cannot find a job outside the home.
Mm-hmm. Yes. This is a very bad economy. And with so many people being laid off, it's just not a choice. Certainly, as you know, many more women are opening their own businesses.
Right.
They're doing that for a variety of reasons, including the difficulty they have in a more traditional job and handling family responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
But as you also know, your own business is tremendous responsibility and work. And while it may give you a little bit of flexibility on exactly when things are done, it's certainly not an easy option responsibilities.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that none of them are easy.
Yes, none of them are easy options, and the reality is that women who are home with small children all day also are exhausted and, you know, and face even many of the same sorts of problems that we're talking about, and it's really a matter of being clear about what's necessary and what's feasible, and really looking at what's most important for you and for your family, and that includes, you know, maintaining a loving, healthy relationship.
Right. Diane, in our final minutes, I'd like to talk with you about something that your book talks about as well, you interviewed women about, and that is helpers, getting people to help you. I know you talked a little bit about delegating earlier in a, maybe a little bit more of a formal sense, but just to share with you, I found a helper to help me with my kids when my daughter was first born at the local ice cream shop. Is not in that situation, but I literally, she was working there, and her boss said he couldn't give her as many hours as she wanted. So I chatted with her. We went and met her parents. Her parents came over our house to meet with us, and literally within 72 hours, because I was really desperate at the time, my husband was in Africa, and I had this newborn and a dog and a business and the whole thing, she was there to help me take care of, and she lived in my neighborhood. So there, we should not consider getting help always as something that looks traditional like it does in everybody else's situation, right? We can
get help in any number of ways,
right.
And we really need to remove any kind of stigma that we may still have about having help. I know that for some people it's a great stigma that you're not cleaning your own home. Or that you're not with your children all day long.
Right.
One of the things these women did is they really redefined their notion of what a good mother is.
Okay.
And they all stayed in close contact with their children. They often phoned in, depending on the age of the child, during the day. They did, I mean, some incredible things. Someone had the child fax her homework when she traveled. But they didn't believe that their definition of a good mother was someone who had to be there 24/7. And that some things, in fact, like your wonderful helper who was there with your newborn, or someone who comes in after school and helps the kids with their homework, in fact, can do just a fine job, and there's many benefits from having additional loving people in our children's lives.
Yeah, well, and in my case, of course, I could work right next door to where my daughter was, and if there was an emergency, which thank God there never was, then I was there. And, of course, also, the young lady, actually, it was interesting. She stayed with us for 5 whole years, and one of the things she said to me about 2 years into it was, you know, I used to think I wanted to have a lot of children, but I'm so glad I'm here because I can see how much work it is. And I remember she even referred one of her girlfriends to me once who needed a little part-time job, and she came twice, and she said, I can't come back for any more. It's too much work.
It certainly is a great deal of work, and it's certainly a good thing for young women and young men to understand what's involved in having children.
I think that is so important, and I think that's one of the ways, Diane, as you said earlier, that we can help each other is whatever environment we can set up or whatever we're presented with in our own homes and our own businesses and families, that we can show the reality of, you know, the good, the bad, the ugly, the fantastic, and everything where we're running a home, managing a home, and a business and a career is concerned. So everyone can do something to help the next generation. I think that's a really important thing to mention, and certainly your book has done a fantastic job of that. I'm going to show it here again to everyone. Women at the Top, Powerful Leaders Tell Us How to Combine Work and Family. You can probably get it at any local bookstore, on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, every place else. It's available. And also, of course, you can come to indiebusinessradio.com, and you can click through and purchase a copy there at one of my affiliate links. Diane, Professor Halpern, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. It was a real pleasure. And thanks to all those women out there who are doing such a fabulous job with their work and their family.
Well, you've set such a fantastic example for us, and we thank you for that. Thanks for joining. I want you guys to know that next week I'm going to be here on Indie Business Radio with Rosalie Lober, author of Run Your Business Like a Fortune 101. And then I'm also going to have some more people on my radio show after that. I've got shows lined up all the way through the end of September, and I'm working on more after that. So I'll be looking forward to seeing you again next week with Rosalie Lober, author of Run Your Business Like a Fortune 100. Until then, enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way.
You're listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com.